The following program is a production of the Barroom Network. It is intended for all audiences.
Doug Buffone.
This defense sucks. This is moronic.
John Buffone.
If your best run plays are coming off end arounds, there's a problem.
Doug was behind the microphone first. He never held back.
Very difficult to score when your offense is on the bench. When your defense is out there giving up 70, 80, 70, 64-yard drives.
Now, it's his nephew, John, and there's no holding this buffoon back either.
An offensive-minded coach that's running an offense that got 9 yards and a half. A beaten-up defense that isn't necessarily performing in key situations. And a quarterback that was expected to take a big step forward looks like an unsalvageable wreck.
I've had it! I have had it! I want somebody to get kicked in the ass!
How many games can you rattle off that involve the team running the ball 7 times and they win? I can't think of any.
I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me.
Because Bears fans wanted to believe in the worst way that Chicago had a stable, competitive franchise. And this is what we got.
It's Buffone 55, the John Buffone Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Buffone 55, a fast-paced approach at Chicago Bears football analysis. I am your host, John Buffone. Barflies, Bear fans, are we calm yet from the weekend? What a game. What a week one. There were some ebbs and flows. There were some peaks and valleys. We're going to jump into all of that. But with me, as always, is my producer and co-host, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, how you doing? You calmed down yet?
I'm doing a lot better than I was during that fourth quarter, that's for sure.
I tell you what, there were so many emotions. I felt like a teenager again. There were so many things going. There was sadness. There was happiness. There was joy. There was anger. I tell you what, I felt like I was in my own emo music video. There was so much going on. But on Sunday, I was like 30 minutes from going on to our new post-game show, Bear Football, here on the Barroom Network. And my mood totally shifted from that point to when the red light came on and we started recording live on our YouTube channel. Alyssa, were you kind of the same way? Were you back and forth?
Definitely. And I actually had my story on Bears Wire all written for the loss. After the fourth quarter, I had to scrap the whole thing. But, you know, I'm not complaining because it ended in a win. But, man, that fourth quarter was just unbelievable.
They definitely snatched victory from the jaws of defeat. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Bears later and learn about their next opponent in just a minute from our guest Bobby Skinner. But first, you got a little business to take care of, right?
I do. So let's let our new listeners know that every week on Hump Day, we take a close look at the Chicago Bears' upcoming opponent. That way we know who to boo and who to ridicule. After that, we do our B55 segment. That's when I ask John 5 questions. And his response must be completed within 55 seconds. 55 is, of course, John's tribute to Doug Buffone, his uncle, who played 15 seasons with the Bears and wore number 55. We end the show with an open conversation about our beloved Bears. John, I'm handing the ball to you.
All right, I got it. We're going to keep it civil, so no booing or ridiculing our guest, because he is nice enough to take time to teach us all about this New York Giants team that the Bears will be taking on. His name is Bobby Skinner, the host of the Talking Giants podcast. Bobby, thanks for being on. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Bobby, I'm going to jump right into it because we need to know a little bit about this Giants team, because we saw a lot of flashes from them in their most recent loss, 26-16 to the Steelers, but there were some frustrating aspects on both sides of the ball. Is it going to be more from the Giants moving forward, or were there reasons to be optimistic if you're back in this football team?
I think with the offense, you definitely have to be optimistic. One, I don't think you'll ever see a worse game from the run game with Saquon Barkley, where you have 15 carries for 6 yards. So one, adjustments will be made on our side. It just will never be that bad again. And if it is, we're in serious trouble. And with Jones, man, the things that you wanted to see him improve on was, you know, putting two hands on the ball when you're under duress. You guys know from last year that the fumbles were an issue. Being quick when he needed to be, but also we want him to keep taking those chances. So I feel like myself and the fan base as a whole is very encouraged from what we see about Daniel Jones. And I, as a fan with a second-year QB, that can kind of make you ignore some other things that might not be that great. Is like we're really happy with what we see from the quarterback.
One of the biggest changes with this franchise obviously came on the sideline. The Giants parted ways with Pat Shurmur this offseason and brought in Joe Judge, the latest in a line of Bill Belichick disciples. What I know it's super early in the season. There weren't a whole lot of preseason games to go off of, but what are the early reviews so far as Judge takes over the reins as head coach?
Well, it's been weird. The last two coaches have been essentially offensive coordinators in Shurmur and McAdoo, where with Judge is kind of that Coughlin type where he's managing the game. So nothing like managing the game-wise we really didn't like. There was one fourth down early. We would have wanted to go for it. But besides that, I feel like everyone feels good about Judge. There maybe some might be questions about Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator. But Joe Judge as a whole, I think we'll feel confident. It's a young team, so they can buy into some of his hard-nosed stuff, whether the team from 3 years ago might not have bought in the same way. So I feel like everyone feels good about Joe Judge. There might be a little concern about Garrett, but also it was 1 week against a Steelers defense that is like top 2-3 in the league.
I want to talk about Jason Garrett a little bit just because I saw some Twitter reaction, unhappy fans with Jason Garrett, and this kind of seemed like it was going to be a good match. He comes from Dallas that has obviously a stud running back, going to New York that has a stud running back. It seems like he would know how to cater to that kind of offense. What were some of the reservations against Jason Garrett after week one?
Well, I don't mean to get too nerdy, but with Golden Tate out, there's like a lot of three tight end sets, and with Evan Engram, you're just asking for trouble because he's not going to be able to block guys. Like when you bring it in tight like that, RPOs have been changing the game in the NFL. Jones ran them a lot last year, and we didn't run any of those. We were one of like five teams that didn't run any, and that changed some things. Just some like little like nerdy stuff that we didn't like from Garrett. But also, like I said, it was 1 week, and we did like how he's been working with Jones and how Jones is trained. Maybe that's more so on Jones than it is Garrett. So there's definitely some things you don't like about just running the ball into these stacked boxes, but I also don't want to overreact either.
Fair enough. 1 week, that's not going to set the trend for the entire season. But I do want to talk about Daniel Jones. As a rookie, he did have some impressive moments, but he did turn the ball over quite a bit. And against the Steelers, he kind of did the same with some impressive throws, but committed two turnovers, one near the goal line. What are the realistic expectations for Daniel Jones heading into his second year?
Yeah, the interceptions aren't something like, obviously, you don't want to have interceptions, but the biggest thing was, like, don't fumble the ball. Like, that's so much more controllable than interceptions, where it's not, like, processing. It's literally holding on to the ball higher and tighter with two hands. And he did that. Like, there was one play where it was so noticeable that he's get under pressure, and he realizes he's going to take a sack, and he just holds the ball with two hands tight. The interceptions, the one in the goal, the red zone, you hate that, but it also comes with the territory of a guy like him who likes to hold on, like, be a gunslinger and try and make plays happen. You watched that drive. There's like 5-6 plays where Jones just makes something happen out of nothing. But then he also screws it at the end. So obviously like that, you don't want that to happen. But we also know young QBs, I'd rather them take chances and make mistakes than be passive, 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 and you never really develop into anything.
Yeah, and something I wanted to ask is because when the Daniel Jones pick occurred, there was a lot of ridicule. There were a lot of second guesses. I assume Giants fans were also falling into that category of either criticizing it and maybe wondering what they were doing. But is he turning the tide a little bit on that? Because Chicago has a similar dynamic where they took a quarterback very high. A lot of fans weren't sure if they should have done it. And that for the most part, that quarterback hasn't done a whole lot to change everybody's mind. Has shown some flashes, but hasn't really turned the tide. Is Daniel Jones primed to do that against some of his doubters that thought he should not have been picked that high?
Definitely in the fan base, he changed him pretty quick. I mean, that first game against Tampa got people to switch pretty quick. And even like people in the media that have no skin in the game. And also, I think you guys know that the draft is crazy. You're trusting on a lot of other people. And then you realize, like, hey, you know what? I'm not a scout. you know, and then you start learning more about the guy and it makes more sense. And fandom comes into play. So for the most part, the fan base is really happy. And like you guys mentioned, the turnovers, it was just nice to see a game against a good defense where he didn't fumble the ball 2-3 times.
Yeah, baby steps. And, you know, if you're moving forward, you're not moving backwards. So not so a pretty good opening act for Daniel Jones. I want to turn our attention to the run game. The Giants, whew, they were held to 29 rushing yards against the Steelers. Saquon Barkley, just 6 rushing yards on 15 carries. What went wrong? And can the Giants turn things around against the Bears? Was this more of a was it more of the Steelers, or was it more of the Giants for that?
Both. On the Giants end, like I mentioned before, we did a lot of free tight end stuff, and we were just running into like 9-10 guys, and Ingram wasn't holding his blocks. And this is where you can change that. You can do less of Ingram blocking on the edge. But what you can't change is our right tackle, Cam Fleming, is just not good. And we knew he was not good going into the season. So I know Khalil Mack switches sides and stuff, so we're confident in Andrew Thomas. Even our center, it was his first game playing center, we have some confidence in him, like that he's going to grow. But our right tackle in Cam Fleming, he's a journeyman. He's just not that good. So that's the worry with the run game and the offensive line as a whole, is that Cam Fleming just isn't that good. And we've seen, you know, what Khalil Mack has done against not that good player Nate Solder the last couple of years.
You talked about that offensive line. I wanted to kind of follow up on that. Some of the times you have a young line and they can progress and build up chemistry and get better as the year goes on. That doesn't necessarily sound like the case with the Giants offensive line. Is there a possibility this team could gel and get, or the offensive line could gel and get better, or are they kind of what you see is what you get?
With Cam Fleming, like I said, he's just bad. Like I don't think he's going to ever be good. With Andrew Thomas, the rookie we took in the first round, a lot of good stuff with him. Will Hernandez, the left guard, he was a second-round pick 2 years ago. He played good in that game. We just never ran to the left. That was another thing. They ran to the left one time in Saquon. The right guard in Kevin Zeitler, he's like an all-pro guy. He had his worst game as a Giant. I don't expect that to continue. And if it does, then you're in trouble because he's getting paid a lot of money. And then the center is Nick Gates, who played guard and tackle last year and was just super impressive. And they extended him. They threw him at center. It was his first time playing center in a game with the COVID offseason. So there is hope. I have a ton of hope for him. If it doesn't work out after 5-6 games, he goes back to guard or tackle, and then we're just still bad at center. So there is hope besides the right tackle spot.
Fair enough. And if that Giants offensive line can give Daniel Jones some time, they do have some weapons in the passing game, including Darius Slayton, who had over 100 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns in the loss to the Steelers. Is Slayton kind of emerging as that number one guy? There's a lot of reports and a lot of analysis going into the season where it's just like, we're not sure who the number one is. You know, Golden Tate's still there. Sterling Shepard's still there. Darius Slayton had flashes. Is he the one who's emerging as that number one guy?
Yeah, and going into the year, I would have said Shepard was the best player. And I think you guys know, when a rookie has a good year, everyone's like, well, he had 8 touchdowns his rookie year. He's going to have like double that in his second year, right? And double the yards. You expect this huge jump where it could just be that's who he is. You know, he'll have some years that are better, some years that are worse. But week one against the Steelers, who have good corners and safeties, for him to make those plays and be like the clear number one, It instilled a lot of faith in him that, okay, maybe this guy is the flat-out number one on the team. So, yeah, we're buzzing about Darius Slayton right now.
Might have found a diamond in the rough there. Is getting a little more production than you imagined. I want to turn our attention to the defense now. The Giants managed to get home on Ben Roethlisberger twice in Monday's loss. What can you tell us about the Giants' pass rush and how they get after the quarterback? And is Mitch Trubisky going to have to be a little more mobile come Sunday?
I felt pretty good because Leonard Williams and Dexter Lawrence, the two guys on the inside, looked really good. And then Carter on the outside, he looked pretty good. I don't know if he has to necessarily be mobile. I more so than he did last year against the Giants, I'll say that, I'd hope. The question for Trubisky, which he did in the last game, is we have, I know this is changing the subject a little bit, but we have a weak link at corner, Corey Ballantyne. Last year, you guys lined up Allen Robinson in the slot and just demolish that guy. So the question is, can we hide him and not let, you know, you guys just pick on him all game? Because besides that, we kind of liked what we saw out of the defense.
Could be some opportunities to take advantage of a hole in the secondary from what I'm understanding. But, you know, the Bears, they wanted to establish a running game last week, did a pretty good job at that. What can you tell us about the linebacking core? Is that going to be a little more shored up than last year?
Definitely more shored up than last year, even though that, you know, that's not like the craziest thing to say. Because Blake Martinez, he exceeded my expectations on Monday Night Football. He had 12 tackles, I think 11 of them. We're within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage and had a couple of tackles for a loss. He looked really good. That being said, after him, we only really have one other inside linebacker, Devontae Downs, who's kind of a nobody. They were actually playing Logan Ryan at linebacker a good amount. So Martinez, you feel good about. Outside of him on the inside, you really don't like know who's going to be there. Devontae Downs, who, like I said, we didn't see him. He got the start, but he didn't play much. And then a couple rookies who were inactive in the last game. So Blake Martinez, you feel good about. The rest, you're kind of relying on the defensive line to help them out.
Because we can't really help ourselves on this podcast, I want to ask you about special teams. Is there anybody that has been flashing on any part of special teams, whether it be the returner, the punter, the field goal kicker, a gunner, or anything at all? Anybody that flashes on the Giants special teams unit?
I love the dedication. I always say that I couldn't care less about special teams, even though we hired a special teams coordinator as the head coach. And Joe Judge, that being said, Jarrell Peppers was the punt returner, and he got good yards out of almost every single punt. So I think he actually got hurt versus you guys last year as a punt returner, so I hate that I just brought that up. But Jarrell Peppers looked really good as a punt returner.
All right, we're going to watch out for Jabril Peppers. We always enjoy a good special teams unit here. And the Bears and the Giants, they're meeting for the third time in 3 years. They've split the first two contests. Bobby, what's your prediction for the game? If the Giants are going to be effective and win, what do they have to do? And what's your prediction as a final score?
To do what they have to do to win on offense is simply kind of what they had to do against Pittsburgh, minus the interceptions, is to pick and Jones has to pick and choose his battles. Obviously, you got to run more than 6 yards with Saquon. But Jones, take the deep shots when they're there, but don't force it. And then on the defense is just hide Corey Ballantyne. Force Trubisky to go anywhere else besides at Corey Ballantyne, and force him to make have to think and not just be one read and go. On our show, I always say winners win, losers lose. I'll never predict a loss. So I always predict the Giants to win. So I'll give you a realistic score, though. I'll go Giants 24, Bears 20. How about that?
That's well within the realm of possibility. Bobby, before we let you go, please tell our listeners where they can find you on social media and where folks can listen to your podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I see you guys have a pretty successful ship over there. On Twitter, it's @BobbySkinner_. If for some reason you're trying to get some Giants info in before, it's just Talking Giants on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, all the podcast apps. Would appreciate the download. So, yeah, but mostly on Twitter. I always say when I do go on other people's shows, you'll probably hate me talking about the Giants so much, but I feel like I'm a pretty good follow during the draft. So just hold out hope until like March for me.
Give him a follow. It's a good investment. His name's Bobby Skinner, host of the Talking Giants podcast. Bobby, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, guys. See ya.
All right, we got a lot more show. We'll be right back with more Buffon 55.
On the latest Sharpshooters with Schanowski and Schuster, Chicago's sometimes Bulls beat reporter Joe Cowley says this about the team's executive vice president of operations, Arturis Karnišovas.
I think Bulls fans can at least feel good that, hey, we're getting a guy here who is an architect and is coming from a building that was built that is sturdy and that is impressive and that looks like it will be like that for a couple more years. So if you could duplicate that, put the blueprint in place here, they may have something good in the Eastern Conference. To me, that's the most exciting part Bulls fans can kind of embrace is, this he gets it. He understands a mix of whether it's Euros or just scouting college guys. And he didn't do it alone by any means, obviously, but he comes from a place that you can kind of embrace, like a Miami or a Denver, a place that is building a culture and has a culture, and you're seeing it kind of emerge as a powerhouse. So to me, that's what Bulls fans should be the most excited about, is can he duplicate that blueprint now?
Sharpshooters with Mark Schanowski and David Schuster, only on the Barroom Network.
Welcome back to Buffon 55. Now it's time for our B55 segment, where I ask John 5 questions about the Bears, and he has to answer each within 55 seconds. John, you were a little out of practice last week. Yeah. One response you went over by 10 seconds, another by 5. On one, you were under 5 seconds. It was a lot like the Bears play last week against the Lions, not quite totally in sync. I know you'll do better this time.
Yeah, I want to play that back because I think Aldo's clock was way off. Sometimes I got cut off pretty early, and other times I didn't think the buzzer was ever going to go off. I think the old man fell asleep at the wheel, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. It was week one for everybody.
You make a good point. So we're going to start with this question, and I'll make sure the time hasn't been tampered with by Father John.
That sounds good.
So, John, the Bears took us on a roller coaster of emotions in week one. Can you take us through what was happening in the Buffon household during the Bears' wild ride to victory against the Lions? Let's get this started. 55 seconds and go.
Well, I think it's safe to say that I have a strong heart because it was certainly tested. I was really irritated at halftime. I saw the same broken down offense with the same broken down quarterback. And then in the fourth quarter, I see a switch go off and Mitchell Trubisky stops thinking and starts playing football. He's throwing darts, making reads, and most importantly, getting the team in the end zone. And then after the Fuller interception, I sprung up from my couch and I thought, holy hell, they could actually win this game. And then when Mitch hit Miller for the go-ahead touchdown, I'm pretty sure my neighbors thought they were living beside a psychopath. And then I got that familiar cold chill when Detroit started chipping their way down the field. And when that ball got to DeAndre Swift, I literally dropped my phone in a paralytic fear that they were going to blow it. And when he dropped it, I thought it was maybe time that I stop watching sports altogether because it's starting to compromise my health. The final whistle sounded and the Bears won. I literally just put my hands on my head and thought, what the hell did I just watch?
It was crazy because watching it, and I feel like this a lot watching Bears games, you know, as they're, you know, they're down and they're, you know, starting to make a comeback and it doesn't happen. So I'm like automatically telling myself, I'm not going to fall for this again. I'm not going to let them get my hopes up. The Bears do a really good job of teasing you before they just yank it all away in the end. But then like the opposite happened and they actually pulled it off. Mitchell Trubisky looked like an actual NFL quarterback. And if we could just get 4 consistent quarters of that, like just imagine like what this team could be.
You're asking a lot, but after that game, I got a text from one of my buddies in Pittsburgh, and he sent a text. He's like, if you have to cheer for this team for another 5 years, you're not going to make it. So he was watching the game. They know, outsiders know, this team will play with your heart no matter what. But it was a wild ride. I'm glad it ended the way that it did, though.
Otherwise, we would be having nightmares of DeAndre Swift.
Oh, yes.
Forever. So a lot has happened in week one, but nothing so apparent as the play of one Mitchell Trubisky. After a tough first half where he had under a 50% completion percentage, Trubisky hit the gas in the fourth quarter, throwing 3 touchdown passes, including a beautiful 27-yard strike to Anthony Miller to seal it. What is your evaluation of Trubisky's play, and does it give you any hope moving forward? 55 seconds on the clock.
Well, he looked mostly bad for the majority of the game, if you ask me. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt this time, which I rarely ever do with Mitchell Trubisky. But it was the first amount of gameplay anyone has had this year, so maybe there was some rust to knock off. But we did see some bad throws. We did see some miscommunications. We saw him do that little loop-de-loop scramble thing he likes to do so much that resulted in a 27-yard loss. Look, the fourth quarter was great. All 3 touchdown passes took a skilled throw. A good jump ball to Graham. He looked off the defenders on the whims touchdown. And obviously, the dime to Anthony Miller speaks for itself. I just want to see it all come together, though. He had a great performance in the final quarter, but a lot of teams that aren't Detroit are not going to give the Bears an opportunity to come back like that. So I know at this point, consistency is kind of a big ask, but I think a game like this can do a lot for the psyche of this quarterback.
And I know, like, it feels like, you know, I'm a broken record, but obviously the most frustrating thing about Trubisky, see, he has me, my tongue tied, is just how inconsistent he is. You see a sensational fourth quarter performance, and then you wonder why he can't do that consistently. And you, like, the first 3 quarters were just god-awful. The calls for Foles, I feel like obviously it's going to, you know, continue through the season, but it just felt like, and when he scrambled backward, like you said, the little loop-de-loop and fumbled, I was like, oh God, this is how it ends, right? I thought that is where it ended. So,
well, yeah, and no, you're right. And I'd much rather be talking about what he can improve on coming off a win than what he needs to improve on coming off a loss. But I just want people to keep this all in perspective, that we're having a very different conversation if DeAndre Swift catches that ball and they're 0-1. A lot of these conversations have a different tone to them. So we gotta understand that as well.
Absolutely. And I'll take the luck, and hopefully the offense can use this momentum, this win, to actually get off to a quick start in the first half. I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it with my eyes, but they have a good chance to do it against this Giants defense.
I appreciate your enthusiasm.
Hey, I'm trying to. Where's the optimism from last week, John?
No, it's still there. It's still there. I'm cautiously optimistic. We'll call it that. Cautiously optimistic.
So speaking of cautiously optimistic, so obviously week one was full of surprises, you know, both good, but also bad. So using your gift of cramming a whole bunch of words into 55 seconds, I'd like you to give our listeners one good surprise and one bad surprise from the game against the Lions. Your time starts now.
Well, let's start with the bad surprise. The defense as a whole sputtered at times, but something that really stood out to me was Danny Trevathan. He looked a step or two slow throughout the game, and that's a bit alarming. He's 30 now, and things are going to undoubtedly slow down more and more, but I hope this was another case of just knocking off the rust, and eventually he'll get back into the swing of things, because there's a lot of unknowns when it comes to the depth at the inside linebacker position. So I'll say Danny Trevathan was kind of a bad surprise, but as for the good surprise, how about the offensive line in the running game? I was very happy with how Jermaine Ifedi came in and blocked effectively. I thought the line in general did a good job. So props to offensive line coach Juan Castillo. And then the running game was effective because of that. If Montgomery wasn't 100%, I can't wait to see what he looks like whenever he is. That dude never goes down on the first contact. And then Cordarrelle Patterson and Tariq Cohen both showed flashes running the ball. This is the balance that the offense so desperately needs to take some pressure off the quarterback.
And like you said, it felt like we went into this game expecting, obviously, the offense to be bad, and they were for three quarters, and the defense just to kind of pick up where they left off. Like, I was really concerned about the run defense. I mean, obviously missing Eddie Goldman, but that's not, Eddie Goldman's absence is not impacting it as much as it is. So you could chalk that up to it being the start of the season, no preseason games, all of that. But on offense, one of the good surprises, offense and defense, the rookies, Darnell Mooney and Jalen Johnson.
Yeah.
Look at them.
Showing up.
Just showing up. First game, it looked like they fit right in, like they belonged out in the field there.
Yeah, and those were definitely good surprises. That's a good point, because I was all in on Mooney before the season, and he got snaps before I thought he was going to. He got some time on the field before I thought that was going to happen, and he could be an X factor in some of these games because he is blazing fast.
Absolutely, and he only had 3 catches. He caught all 3 passes thrown his way. He was only on the field 31% of the time. You wonder like what he's going to be able to do when they find a way to get him more involved in the offense.
That's going to be exciting if they can get him the ball.
Absolutely. So the Bears defense is the heart of this 2020 team, but they gave up nearly 100 yards rushing to 35-year-old Adrian Peterson, who will forever run on the Bears apparently, and had trouble getting off the field on third down, which is probably the most frustrating thing. But they did come up with a big interception that helped set up the game-winning drive. So, John, do you still believe this 2020 version of the defense will be just as good as 2018 and 2019? The clock starts when you do.
Well, I guess Adrian Peterson will continue to kill the Bears until he's about 80 years old. But look, there were some glaring problems. We talked about not having Eddie Goldman. Yeah, that is going to hurt. And they gave up some big plays on third and long. And quite frankly, the pass rush wasn't what we expected. But it's a veteran defense that made a play when they needed it. Jalen Johnson had a very solid NFL debut, like we said. And the pass rush, I believe, is going to get better. But that also is going to depend on Robert Quinn getting into the lineup itself. Some point. We talked about this on the post-game show. Mac was getting a lot of attention from the Lions, and moving forward, that will create opportunities for someone like Quinn to feast on his matchups. But he has to play. I don't know the severity of his injury. Apparently, he returned back to practice, but they're keeping a pretty tight lid on the whole situation. I think this defense can grow into a great product, but for that to work, they need to get to the quarterback, and everyone needs to be on the field. So I am holding out hope for this defense.
Yeah, the biggest concern on defense was the run game, but I feel like that's going to sort itself out as the season goes on. But looking at the pass rush, which was a huge issue last year, the big reason why you brought Robert Quinn in here to pair opposite Khalil Mack and take advantage of those opportunities, once he gets out on the field, I feel like you'll see what this defense and this pass rush can really accomplish.
Yeah, I really think that there's a potential for them to be a great defense this year. And maybe listen, I have a much more forgiving attitude when it comes to the defense than I do with the offense. And yeah, is that unfair? Maybe. But that's just my outlook on it. I believe that the defense has a lot of potential. There's a whole lot of talent on that side of the ball. And, you know, they were opportunistic. When they needed to make a play, they made it. And that's what a veteran defense does. So I think that there's a lot of room for improvement, but I think that they can accomplish that as well.
So John, the biggest non-game news coming out of Chicago this week was the ongoing tension between the Bears and star receiver Allen Robinson. The 27-year-old is still without a new deal and recently removed all mentions of the Bears from his social media. There were even reports that he requested a trade, even though his agent denied it to Adam Schefter. If Robinson gets traded or is allowed to walk next offseason in free agency, how will that reflect on the Bears front office? Let's turn the clock off on this one because I feel like you're going to need it. Go for it.
Listen, I have a lot of feelings on this. All of them are negative, and all of them are pointed at the front office. Allen Robinson has been nothing but a sensational professional since coming to the Bears in 2018. And this guy has had Blake Bortles and Mitchell Trubisky as his quarterbacks, and he is still putting up elite numbers. What kind of leverage does Ryan Pace think he has? Well, hey, Rob, if you leave, you'll probably get paid more and most likely have a better quarterback. Is that really what you want? Listen, the disrespect that Allen Robinson must feel as Keenan Allen, Cooper Kupp, Amari Cooper, DeAndre Hopkins, they all get paid. And Allen Robinson, the best player on the Bears offense, is currently the 15th highest paid wide receiver in the league and can't get a contract extension. 2017 wasn't that long ago, folks. Remember trying to get excited about Kendall Wright, Marcus Wheaton, Dontrell Inman? This was a franchise so starved for an impact receiver that the fan base was up in arms when they let Cameron Meredith sign with another team. Cameron Meredith. I'll tell you what, if this ends the wrong way and Allen Robinson is either traded or walks in free agency, Ryan Pace is going to lose whatever group of supporters he actually has left. And he isn't the most popular guy with the fans to begin with. But you just won't lose the fans. You're going to lose some of the team. You already see players like Tariq Cohen, Cordarrelle Patterson, Anthony Miller, and rookie Darnell Mooney stepping up on Twitter to voice their support for Allen Robinson. Ryan Pace, if you think you're in a window to win, which I believe you think you are, how in the world do you not get an Allen Robinson deal done? Ryan Pace, do you want to be the smartest and craftiest GM in the league? Find a way to keep your best offensive player. Ryan Pace, do something, because doing nothing has been your biggest problem. I want to hear what the rest of you guys have to say about this. So we're going to go right into our new segment. I'm calling it Buffon's Basement. We walk down the stairs. We wake up Aldo. He's, I think, awake. And we're going to just have an open discussion. And I kind of want to start it with some of this A-Rob talk. Aldo, you awake?
Yeah. Well, how can I not be awake? This is a great show. First of all, Bobby was sensational. Bobby Skinner.
He was.
And the two of you on the B55, I mean, that's electricity. And I'm dying to get into this conversation regarding A-Rob. And but I'd love to hear Alyssa's thoughts first.
I'm sorry, I'm still throwing up from all of the names that John was rattling off at receiver. And like, I had like blacked that it out in my mind, and now it's back. And I'm just like, it was like whiplash a little bit. But like, I mean, like, John, I'm pissed off. Like, I mean, I feel like you see what Ryan Pace has done to, you know, he's done a good job of paying guys that deserve it. And you look at Allen Robinson and you're like, who deserves it more than Allen Robinson? He's been a consummate professional. He's a great guy on and off the field. What he was able to accomplish in one of the worst offenses in the entire league last year, and a thousand yard season, and everyone knows the ball is going his way. It's just, it baffles me that, you know, it's gotten to this point where players have to voice, you know, you have someone like Tariq Cohen, who's also in a contract year, and he's concerned about Allen Robinson getting an extension. I mean, that should tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's that dire of a situation. I'm looking at it from the general manager's point of view, and here is his biggest issue for contracts in 2021, and that is a quarterback. you're going to have to pay somebody to be the quarterback. If Nick Foles comes in and plays lights out, he's got an out on his contract, and so he could leave the team. If Mitchell Trubisky improves and continues to play well, then he's going to demand at least $20 million in today's NFL for quarterbacks. And so all of a sudden, with the big contracts that you have guaranteed to Khalil Mack and a number of other players, you've got to, you know, you've got to figure out where the money is going to come from. And in particular, because there is going to be a hit to the salary cap. It's risen by $10 million every year for the past several years. But next year, it is guaranteed to either stay flat or maybe even decrease. Now, we had on Mike McCartney, a player agent on the Gabriel and Schuster show. And now, take this for what it's worth. He's a player agent, but he says if you really, really want to sign a player, you can find the money. But that means dropping people like Hub Arkish said in a broadcast today, dropping people like Charles Leno and Bobby Massey. So all of a sudden, you're without your two starting tackles for the last couple of years, two, three, 4 years. So it's just something that you know we're going to have to be patient with. And that's exactly what Matt Nagy told Allen Robinson today when they had their long meeting, and just said, you know, Nagy said, we live in a culture of instant gratification. Well, we got to just pause a little bit. And I understand Allen Robinson's frustration. He's seeing all these other players, all these wide receivers get these big fat contracts, and he's wondering, why me? Well, how many of those other teams that signed contracts, their receivers to big contracts, how many of them have to sign a quarterback for next year? DeAndre Hopkins doesn't have that situation with the Cardinals. They've got Kyler Murray still under his rookie contract. So I truly believe that it probably will get done, but we're just going to have to be patient.
I don't disagree with you, Aldo, but I also see teams like the Rams who can give huge contracts to Aaron Donald, Jared Goff, Jalen Ramsey, Cooper Kupp, and they were able to do that, and they're able to move things around. And it's not even so much that I still hold out a lot of hope, that I still expect Allen Robinson to sign an extension, but when you see everybody else signing a contract, the optics are bad. And for Allen Robinson to see all that going on and see, like, I'm the best player on this offense, and they're not taking care of me. And to the point where, I mean, you can say that fans are overreacting. Fine. What about the players? Obviously, the players have a pretty strong opinion on this. They're going to social media. They're kind of speaking out, not necessarily against the front office, but they're urging the front office to make a move. And like Alyssa said, a guy like Tariq Cohen, who doesn't even have his own contract next year, is jumping into the fray and saying that. So what does it do for your team that they're saying, well, if they're not going to take care of A-Rob, am I going to get an extension? So I don't know why some of these other teams have the ability to do it, but yet the Bears are, you know, take their time and they're we're going to play this out and we're going to be patient with it. Well, patience doesn't necessarily make you the most popular guy with the player. So Allen Robinson, if this drags out and he's allowed to enter free agency, maybe, I mean, listen, free agency isn't for like another, what, like 6 months? This could get a lot dirtier by that time, and he may not even want to come back. So I just don't know why you want to be patient with this kind of thing when I think it's just better to understand what this guy brings to it. And yeah, you got to have to sign a quarterback, or Maybe Foles does walk and he's not there. Maybe Trubisky, or you're going to base Allen Robinson's contract on maybe Mitch Trubisky plays really, really well and you got to give him $20 million. That's what you're going to base this on. You're going to risk pissing off Allen Robinson because Mitch Trubisky might light it up this year. I mean, I don't think that's the safest bet in the world. They're probably going to have to sign a quarterback next year, or they're going to have to draft one. And then they're going to be in the same situation that all these other teams are at, a rookie contract on a quarterback, and then they can pay other people. But I just think it just looks bad, and I think you're risking a lot more.
I don't disagree that it looks bad, but I do think that you've got the option of putting the tag, the franchise tag, on your quarterback, on your wide receiver. Which would you rather do you'd rather franchise tag the wide receiver because it's less dollars, right? It's fewer dollars. You say less or fewer?
Sure.
I don't know, but
does that not further motivate the wide receiver to get out then? If you're gonna hold him hostage for a year?
Well, but he has no option, which is why he decided to make noise. Now I got a soundbite of him talking about, you know, how he was asked at today's press conference, today being Wednesday, you know, how can he compartmentalize what is happening with from the business side of things, given that he's clearly frustrated. I mean, he went through the trouble of scrubbing all of the Bears references to his social media accounts, all of the pictures of Bears and stuff. He went through that trouble, so he was clearly frustrated by what is going on. But he was asked, how can you compartmentalize playing football and also the frustrations of the business?
You know, my mind is not focused on anything else, you know, and really not too much, you know, outside of the lines, you know, as certain situations may come up, you know, but for the most part, you know, again, everything is pretty much the same for me. You know, I know there was a lot of commotion and stuff going on yesterday, but, you know, as I just was chilling, you know, talking to Coach Furry about the game plan, you know, watching some stuff on the Giants, you know, so for me, you know, I try to keep the main thing as much as possible. Obviously, you know, being in the NFL, you have, you know, the business of the NFL, so things do come up. But for me, for the most part, you know, I'm able to keep the main thing always.
I'm glad to hear that because it could be he could go the entire year without a contract. And I know that would be awful for him. You want the security. I'm always for the players trying to make as much money as they possibly can because they're out there literally risking their lives for our entertainment. So I want him to make his money. But at the same time, it is a business and there's a finite amount of dollars. And so I can also see it from the business point of view.
Like listening to him talk today and listening to the reports, does it sound like obviously the Bears have made some offers to him that just like he's not okay with? So like what would you think he would be a good amount to pay him every year? Like do you think he belongs in the top five receivers? Do you think in a top 10 contract? Like where do you think Allen Robinson, how much money the Bears should give him?
I think that he could very well get into that top five. Look, he's been able to pull production with bad quarterback play. I mean, I want to see. I think every Bears fan and every football fan would like to see what Allen Robinson could do with an above average or even elite quarterback. Imagine the savings you get if you get an actual top five receiver. If you pair him up with a good quarterback, what he could actually bring to the table. And I don't want to go off like I think Allen Robinson's gone. I think that he's going to sign somewhere else in free agency or the Bears are going to trade him. I fully don't expect the Bears to trade him. I don't think that's even, if you're in a win now mode, you're not going to trade your best offensive player. But we have seen some of this stuff before. Didn't Jordan Howard take away all of his Bears stuff off his Instagram at one point? So, but this is causing, I mean, you do this and you don't want to cause a distraction. Well, guess what? Instead of talking about the Bears, you know, coming upcoming game against the Giants or their win against the Detroit Lions, that was a pretty fleeting storyline given the fact that now every time someone's in the locker room, they're gonna get asked about A-Rob's extension because the players took it upon themselves to make it a distraction. They went to social media. They said extend A-Rob. The fans do that stuff all the time. The fans have been doing that for 2 years and it hasn't really jolted any kind of, you know, news surge. But when the players start doing it, then they're the ones that are proactively causing the distraction. So obviously that means something to them. It means something to A-Rob. And I just wish that they could have taken care of this before the season. I understand the business and the capologist and the finite amount of money, but I just feel like McCartney said on the other podcast, if you really want to sign a player, you can find a way to do it. And I'm not one of those people that call the Bears a cheap franchise. I think that moniker left a long time ago whenever they would start throwing out. Obviously, Khalil Mack has a pretty lucrative deal. Obviously, they signed Julius Peppers to a pretty lucrative deal. Right. I don't think they're afraid to sign people to a lot of money. I don't think it's a cheap aspect. But I would love to know what the hiccup is, because here's my thing. If they sign an extension and it happens this week, next week, or in 3 weeks, then Aldo, I'll ask you this, then it really wasn't about the cap in the quarterback then, was it? There was something else holding it up, right?
Correct. No, and it could be Allen Robinson and his agent holding it up. I mean, what if they are saying, we want DeAndre Hopkins money? Total average per year, he's going to be making $27 million a year. So what if he's asking for that kind of money? And the Bears are saying, yeah, we believe you are really, really good, but you're not DeAndre Hopkins good, which is arguable, you know. But I'm confident it's going to get worked out, because I don't think Ryan Pace is going to, you know, Ryan Pace signed him to this free agent contract, got a deal, because what's happened with wide receiver contracts, he's got a deal. And so he's trying to get another deal. And I just think it's going to take a little time. And, to answer Alyssa's contract, I mean, I'm looking here at, overthecap.com, Keenan Allen signed the contract where it's $50 million of the $80 million is fully guaranteed. And I think that's Allen Robinson type money, an $85 million contract with $50 million guaranteed and spread out in a way that could help the team's cap situation in 2021.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good possibility. Now, and you know what, you have a point where it says maybe it is A-Rob. I don't know why I don't think that is the case, and it could be. And maybe they thought the Bears got him for a discount for 3 years, and now it's time to make up for it. But all I see is a 27-year-old elite receiver that you could sign to a 4-year deal, and you're still going to get 4 years of his prime. And I just think if you are really in a win now mode, if you truly feel like we have a 2-year window or a 3-year window, you invest in that then. Invest in the 2 and 3 years. They already invested in this year by giving Jimmy Graham money. They invested this year by re-signing Trevathan and signing Ted Ginn Jr., who they didn't really even use. So if you're truly in a win-now mode, why don't you want to sign, I don't even think it's arguable, the best player on your offense? Yeah. He is the best player on their offense.
So, like, what happens if you let Robinson walk, right? And obviously the Bears are banking on Anthony Miller to have a great year. So maybe the plan is, you know, let him become a number one receiver. But what if that doesn't happen? Aren't you going to just go to the free agent market and sign another receiver? So why not just give that money to A-Rob?
Now they'll bring in someone like the Kendall Wrights or the Marcus Wheaton, somebody who's it'll be a cast off from another team, and they're going to think if they can rejuvenate him. They'll get somebody at a low market value who they think can come in and, you know, be a serviceable guy. He's not going to be Allen Robinson, cuz if they let Robinson walk, they're not going to go out and sign a big splashy wide receiver free agent. So you're going to have, hopefully Anthony Miller steps into that number one role, and then, you know, maybe Mooney is your number two at some point, and then you bring in a serviceable wide receiver that could be your number three option. But none of those scenarios sound as good as having a stud as like Allen Robinson at the number one spot, opening up a lot of opportunities for everyone below him. None of those scenarios sound nearly as good.
Yeah,
I thought the Bears' offense looked bad on Sunday in those first three quarters. Take Allen Robinson out of it.
That's right.
It's going to be unwatchable.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said there, and that's why I'm 99% sure it's going to get done somehow, some way. It could get uglier before it gets done, but I'm confident. Hey, I want to squeeze in a soundbite here from Matt Nagy, because Alyssa was using the word consistency, Trubisky and consistency, a number of times, and that seems to be the theme with Mitchell Trubisky's career in the NFL. And so Matt Nagy was asked about what do we have to do? What do the Bears have to do in order to get consistency out of Mitch Trubisky? And this was actually kind of a funny soundbite. Check this out.
The quarterback position, inconsistencies can get you, right? And that's what can get frustrating if you're inconsistent. So you can't be consistently inconsistent. You got to be consistent all the time. That separates the good from the great ones. And we're trying to get to that point. That fourth quarter that Mitchell produced and put together, number one, was special physically, but for him to bounce back mentally the way he did after those first three quarters, And again, I don't want to give all the credit to Mitchell because there were some pretty good routes. There was some pretty good protection and there were some pretty good catches as well. But what happens is that when you fight through and you battle through like that, you feel that momentum and it catches fire and then it ignites the defense and then it goes back and forth. And so, boy, if he could put together to throw three touchdowns, be 8 for 10 and have that rating he had, you know, you don't need all that the whole game, but if you could get some of that, that'd be pretty good.
You can't be consistently inconsistent.
Describes Trubisky to a T.
So many words. Just so much words.
But it describes him so much. Consistently inconsistent.
I laugh at John. He's like tired of the Nagyisms.
It's just you can only eat so much word soup before you throw up. It's just so much. And I get it. It's coach speak. And it's just like all of this skirting around and talking for 5 minutes and absolutely saying nothing. Matt Nagy should have a radio show when he retires because he could fill dead air like nobody else. Just talk for a half an hour. And, you know, if you say something that's, you know, have a point if you want, but if you just need to fill some air, just go and talk. I mean, it is what it is. I want to skirt back real quick because I just looked this up. You know what the 2021 free agent wide receiver class looks like?
It's bad.
Because right now it's eight. Yeah. I want you to think Allen Robinson is there. And here is the next tier: AJ Green, T.Y. Hilton, Larry Fitzgerald, who's probably going to retire, mm-hmm. Sammy Watkins, Marvin Jones, Kenny Still, Breshad Perriman. That's basically your wide receiver class of 2021 in free agency. Tell me who the crown jewel would be in that group of people if Allen Robinson was allowed to get to free agency. Once again, AJ Green, T.Y. Hilton, Sammy Watkins, Marvin Jones, Kenny Stills, and then Allen Robinson. Try to tell me that a team like Washington wouldn't go out and give him $100 million just to bring him in. So I don't like the idea of Allen Robinson potentially getting to free agency because it's him and then a huge step down for everybody else if you're looking for a wide receiver in that market. And then if Allen Robinson would walk, who would the Bears bring in? I'm looking at some of these names. I don't like them.
Keep Robinson. Just sign him.
Philip Dorsett. There we go. Yeah. Hey, Dontrell Inman. He'll be available. You want to bring him?
Oh, reunion.
Yeah.
So, but here's the reality is that when you look at leverage, it's the Bears that have leverage because they have the ability to franchise tag him. So Allen Robinson may say, screw it. I'm not going to play with the Bears next season. Well, guess what? Then you will have to be either traded or you're going to have to sit out. And it could get ugly like Le'Veon Bell ugly. But I just don't think that's going to happen. I think that, you know, there's a little bit of hardball going on with both sides. You know, Allen Robinson knows how good he is. His agent knows how good he is. And Ryan Pace knows that he's got the leverage of the franchise tag and so forth. So it's just going to be kind of an ugly public battle. And, hey, I love Allen Robinson, but he created this drama with this whole social media stuff, you know? So
I understand, but that does that not just speak to the huge amount of frustration going on then? Like,
yeah,
because
sure.
Allen Robinson has never been the diva type, right? Because
nope.
He's never been the type to act out and try to get publicity and, you know, he still isn't bashing the franchise. He's still, despite the fact that he did create a little bit of this uproar,
right,
he's still not saying anything wrong, not saying I might sit out, saying I want to be traded, saying I want my money. He's not doing any of that. So I just don't know. And like, why? I want to know what the roadblock is. Is it the cap? Is it Allen Robinson asking for too much? And we're probably never going to know.
Right.
But at the same time, it's frustrating to see this as literally, because you're watching your team's best offensive player have to go through this. It's just kind of frustrating. You make these real good points about the negotiations and how it's going by, and I buy into that. And maybe it's my fanhood that is showing through and being super, you know, irritated about this, that we're still talking about it. But if he would you agree that if they decide to franchise tag him next year, that's basically saying we're going to get you for one more year. And then if I'm Allen Robinson, I'm thinking, I ain't coming back here. You're going to franchise tag me and hold me hostage for a year? I'm not re-signing here. And then go get paid big money somewhere else. So if they franchise tag him, are you just getting one more year of Allen Robinson and then sending him on his way?
Yeah, you know, this whole franchise tag thing, I can't believe the Players Union agreed to that.
Yeah, because, how about that, by the way? Yeah. I mean, that's for a different show altogether, but that it just seems like you're agreeing to, like, not – yeah, they get paid fully guaranteed a good 1 year.
Right.
And if you take the Kirk Cousins route, you can turn it into a pretty lucrative career. But it is kind of stifling your mobility a bit.
Oh, my goodness. It's like I'm agreeing to be held hostage for a year.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a multimillionaire hostage, but yes, it is a hostage regardless, situation.
Oh, should we talk about something else, given the fact that we've been harping on this Allen Robinson thing for a while? I mean, the Bears do have a game this week. I mean, they have an opportunity to go 2-0 against the Giants. You want to talk about some more drama? What do you guys think about Robert Quinn? Some more drama stirred up today, thinking like, oh, he might not play all year. And then it's like, oh, he's going to play. And then today, and then like, oh, he's back at practice in a limited capacity. So, right. Alyssa, do you think that this guy's going to get on the field this week? Or we're gonna have to wait another week before we see the debut of the shiniest new toy that the Bears got this offseason?
Well, I think the fact that he was limited at practice is a good sign. I mean, that's better than we were last week. Like that's like the most I've been glued to an injury report all week, just like watching. Is he gonna be limited? Nowhere. Is he gonna go to practice? Nowhere. And then Nat Nagy, when Quinn was doubtful, like, oh, you don't know, maybe he'll be good to go. Stop it. but I feel like if he's good to go this week, which I feel like hopefully he is. I mean, just imagine what they can do against that Giants offensive line.
Oh, gosh.
Like, this is a week you hope that he is good to go.
Mm-hmm. And that Bobby got me excited about that Giants offensive line. Like, there's some serious opportunity. And I watched that full game, the Giants and the Steelers. Daniel Jones does not like pressure too much. And I think that what quarterback does.
He did not react.
He did not react well to it. And I saw the Steelers get after him. Now, obviously, the Steelers have a good defense, but they were sending people at Daniel Jones, and they were not. I saw Saquon miss a few pickups where Daniel Jones got flattened, and obviously Saquon Barkley missed his assignment. If you watch some of the film on that, I think Pagano might want to dial up some things against the Giants this week, where they just go after the kid and see if they can create turnovers that way.
Yeah, you know, Matt Nagy has been traditionally very conservative with injured players, so that's why I think it's probably going to be week three before we see him. That being said, you know, it's hard to argue with that conservatism because this team does have poor offensive line blocking, so perhaps you don't need him as badly as you do for the rest of the season, so why risk it? What I would like to see is better play out of some of the guys who in week one didn't really play to their capabilities, and that includes guys like Danny Trevathan. Danny Trevathan just looked like an old man out there, and
I don't know what the problem was.
I hope that it was just week one rust with, you know, no preseason and stuff like that. But if that's the Danny Trevathan we're going to get all in 2020, then Saquon Barkley is going to do what Adrian Peterson did times three. You know, it's going to get
better. You better have Roquan on him.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't put Danny Trevathan against him. It's got to be Roquan.
Right.
There's no way after last week.
After looking what Adrian Peterson did, I don't expect them to hold Saquon Barkley to 6 yards rushing this week. And I did see a lot of those three tight end sets that Bobby was talking about. I think that goes out the window. I think Jason Garrett, for all of his, you know, flaws as a head coach or whatever you want to talk about, I think he knows how to draw up a game plan and find a way to attack the Bears defense. He's going to see film from last week where Adrian Peterson was finding plenty of running space, and the Bears are going to have to do something to adjust to that, because if they decide that they want to just run the ball and then give Daniel Jones some quick two-step drops and get the ball out quick. Mm-hmm. We've seen the Bears' defense in recent years get picked apart that way. And one of the games that, I mean, is always going to be burned into my mind, and I understand, I think Fangio was still here during that, but remember that Dolphins game where maybe Albert Wilson went buck wild over the Bears? But yeah,
I was at that game.
And all you see is like these quick two-step drops, ball out, and the Bears had no idea how to react to it. And I'm not saying it's a different defensive coordinator. There's some different personnel there. I'm not saying history is going to repeat itself there, but I would hope to see some better linebacker play because that's going to be crucial.
Really, really is. And, you know, the defensive line, Khalil Mack, did not have a great game, and I went back and I looked at the tape and to kind of study what's going on here. And the Lions did a really nice job. You know, they got rid of the ball quickly on most plays, you know, on plays where Mack was lined up opposite the backup right tackle who played for the injured, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce that name, but played for the injured starter. You know, they would run away from Mack and stuff. But there were still a handful of plays where Mack just didn't look like that Khalil Mack from his first season with the Chicago Bears, where his strength and speed and quickness just made him so dominant. And in some cases, he was just being held literally in some cases, but also just held back by the left tackle, Taylor Decker, who did a really, really nice job on Khalil Mack. So I'm hoping that game two, we start to see the Khalil Mack of the 2018 season, because we really need that Khalil Mack.
Well, don't forget that Mack was nursing a knee injury. He was limited in practice last week, and he was limited today too. So I'm wondering if that's factoring into that.
Yeah. That's worrisome that he had injuries last season and now he has started off this season with injuries too. He's such a physical player. Maybe we're starting to see, you know, the wear and tear of playing with that rage that he plays with start to slow him down.
Guys, at the beginning of the year, I thought that it was going to be the front seven that carried this defense, where all of the pressure on the quarterback and the crashing in the run defense, that was going to make it a lot easier on the secondary. Now, the secondary actually played really well. For the most part, against the Lions. Now, Kenny Golladay wasn't playing, and there are some other factors there, but is it possible that I hope it's not, because I don't think that gives it a great outcome, but is it a possibility that the secondary might be the strength of this defense moving forward?
Very possible.
It's fair to say after the week, right? I would say so. Well, looking at what Jalen Johnson was able to do with no preseason games, no offseason, coming off shoulder surgery, like, he had a very impressive performance. Eddie Jackson had a great game back there. Kyle Fuller, Deshaun Gibson. So, I mean, like, you could definitely argue it, especially after, you know, how the defense looked Sunday against Detroit.
Right. You've got inarguably, you've got two Pro Bowlers in Eddie Jackson and Kyle Fuller back there in the secondary. And with the other safety, Gibson, you know, that guy is a good football player. He's moved around from team to team over the years, but it's not because of his play. It's been just because of numbers, and safeties sometimes don't get the respect that they should. And as Alyssa just said, the rookie looked pretty damn good for a guy who, you know, just stepped in with very limited preseason. Let's remember, he wasn't a full participant in the early practices, so he looked very good. So I'm with you there, John. If you're saying that the secondary is the strength of the team, I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah, it's very possible moving forward, and we're going to see how Jalen Johnson evolves. Kyle Fuller, I think, balled out. Eddie Jackson speaks for himself, and Gibson looks like a real serviceable professional back there who's going to add some zing to the defense. So I think It's such a small sample size. We've had no preseason, and we've had one regular season game to go off of. So I don't want to make any 16 game judgments off of, you know, 60 minutes of football. So I think this week will kind of give us a better understanding of where they're at after a week of going through game day practices, a week of looking over film, being able to analyze themselves a little bit better. I think that. That the week two will be a better representation of what they're going to be. I almost forgot that we're doing a podcast here because we're just kind of talking and we're still on. So, before we kind of get out of here, I wanted to ask you guys, who do you think an X factor could be on the offense this week? Could it be that one of the tight ends takes a step forward like Jimmy Graham or Cole Kmet and they make a big play going against this defense? Or do you think it could be someone like Darnell Mooney or one of the Cordell Patterson or Cohen? Who do you think could be primed for a big game offensively if the Bears offense actually does produce? Who do you think could be an X factor in the game?
I think one of the tight ends. I mean, they didn't get them involved that much last game. Obviously, Jimmy Graham had a touchdown and he had a couple of catches. I wouldn't really call them drops. He mistimed his jump, but I think Cole Kmet had one target. Where's Kmet? And I feel like the Bears are going to start to get him more involved. I think that the tight ends can really help this offense this week.
Yeah, you know what was interesting at today's press conference, today being Wednesday, a big topic of discussion was the amount of snaps that Mitch took in week one against the Detroit Lions under center. There was an almost 50-50 split of shotgun and being under center, whereas last year, I went back and looked at the numbers, it was 75% shotgun and 25% from under center. And so Mitch was asked about that, and he said, we self-scouted, and we saw that we had more explosive plays from under center, and that defenses weren't able to guess that we were passing as often and working from under center, we kept defenses guessing more on whether it was going to be run or pass. And so, I'm really, really hopeful that that trend is going to continue, because as the three of us know, and I bet 99% of our listeners know, this Bears offense was so predictable last year. And seems to be a commitment now to disguise what is going on. And so to answer your question, I think this could be David Montgomery or Cordero Patterson working out of the backfield, doing some cool things, running the ball and catching the ball out of the backfield. So the X factor, I think it's going to be somebody out of the backfield.
I think in kind of Bobby talked about this, they tried to hide some of their weaknesses in the secondary, and then Allen Robinson just ate when he got put in the he was feasting on it whenever he was in the slot. I think whoever they line up in the slot could have another big day. I want to see more of Darnell Mooney on the field. I know that I've been beating the drum for this guy since before they even drafted him, but we didn't see Ted Ginn really involved in the offense at all. And I am interested to see if we start seeing a shift in snaps between Mooney and Ginn. And if Mooney's able to be put in that slot, or maybe he's just lined up outside and he starts running burn routes. I think that he's going to get better as the season goes along. And I think the Bears coaching staff is going to draw up more things for him to get involved, because both Anthony Miller and Allen Robinson, great receivers. They're not that sub 4.4 thing kind of receiver like Darnell Mooney is. He can flat out run. And I think if they get the ball in his hands in some space, maybe going across the middle, or any route really. I looking at his stuff before the draft, he can take any route. He can take it to the house. So I'm interested to see if they want to try to get him involved and take advantage of maybe some of the deficiencies in the Giants secondary. He has the potential to blow the top off a couple of defenses.
Mm-hmm.
And did you hear what he told reporters after the game when he stepped on the field? The first thing,
speed.
Lions defender, speed, speed, speed. And like, they knew immediately, like his first game. So like, I mean, he's got that blazing speed, and I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a super fun player to watch.
Yeah, it was like when I was watching the Kansas City Chiefs in the game that opened the season, and you see the players that they have on their roster, guys that can catch the ball and just take off. Yeah. That first catch by Darnell Mooney, you know, you saw that. First of all, and how he ran that route. Stopped on a dime, turned around, made the catch, and then he got up. He went down to kind of secure the ball, which I love to see a player. He made sure he made the catch before running, and then he just almost got away from the defender. That would have been so sweet if he would have scored a touchdown on his first catch. But I'm really, really psyched about what he can do. And by the way, Ted Ginn was targeted on that one pass
right behind
that,
him
exactly that oh, Mitch threw behind
that
him.
Was an ugly throw.
Yes, oh. It really was. And anyone that likes to dissect, you know, the mechanics of throwing and so forth, there's a really cool article at bearsbarroom.com written by Dan Wiggins, and he has analyzed the physics and mechanics and all this stuff about Mitch Trubisky, and he kind of concludes that Mitch is just inconsistent with his hip movement on making throws, which leads to inconsistency in his accuracy. And it's a really fascinating article. So anyone that, you know, loves to delve into the mechanics of quarterbacking, check that out. Dan Wiggins, an article on bearsbarroom.com.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Someone's got to get Mitch. Sorry.
No, I was going
to
say.
Someone needs to get Mitch's Dax number. Remember Dak with his little hips?
Yeah.
Hook him up. Let's go.
get that hip action going. And that's a great article to show, kind of peel back the curtain on why some of these throws look the way that they do sometimes. And I think a lot of people just think, well, this dude just can't throw. Well, maybe it's more along the lines of he doesn't know how to throw, or it's the muscle memory isn't there to throw consistently. But hey, before we say goodbye, I just want to remind everybody that this Sunday after the Giants-Bears game, you can catch our post-game show, Bear Football. Tyler Ellis, Aldo, and I review the good, the bad, and as Matt Nagy might say, the predictably unpredictable. It's a video show that you can catch on our Bears Barroom YouTube channel or any of our Bears Barroom social media channels. We would love to interact with you, so you can join us in the chat room and we'll address your comments and your questions, and you can join us live. The show will be housed on the YouTube channel, and an audio podcast of the show will be available Sunday night if you cannot join us live. So it'll be available anytime after the Bears-Giants game.
And John and I will soon debut our new podcast, Pass the Mic. That show will take a look at women in sports broadcast media. And with what happened in Chicago a few days ago when a well-known sports radio broadcaster was critical of what ESPN's Maria Taylor wore on the sideline on Monday Night Football, it's clear that there are still many obstacles that women face. So on Pass the Mic, we're going to talk about those obstacles, and we'll have a lot of sports talk as well. So make sure you look for the debut of Pass the Mic here on the Barroom Network on September 24th.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to working with you on that project, Alyssa. I think it's time that we start showcasing and spotlighting a lot of these female voices rather than what we have seen recently. But I think it's time for us to sign off of this podcast and say goodbye and good luck to everybody.
Goodbye and good luck during the fourth quarter. Hopefully we won't have to deal with that.
Hopefully it's, you know, all four quarters. So for Alyssa and Aldo, I'm John Buffone. Hope to see you on Sunday after the Bears game. Until then, enjoy the game, everybody.